Lots going on in the world of aviation business this week, including news on the 737 investigation from Indonesia and how it's impacting the United States, and food on airlines. Let's bring in Brian Summers this morning. He's the aviation business editor for skiff.com. Brian is with us via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's begin with the 737 investigation in Indonesia, the Lion Air crash. Boeing and the FAA now have issued bulletins about this here in the United States.
Sure. As people probably remember, on October 29th, Lion Air, an Indonesian low-cost airline, had a crash on a 737 MAX. It killed 189 people. And we've learned a little bit more about what happened. Investigators in Indonesia have said the plane's computers may have commanded a steep dive of the airplane, so the computers may have essentially forced this crash. And from what they're saying, it sounds like the airplane may have thought it was in a stall. Of course, that was incorrect. And then an automated system, which didn't want it to be in the stall, would have commanded it to dive to regain speed. According to Bloomberg and some other outlets, there may have been a problem with something called the angle of attack sensor on the aircraft, and I guess this had been replaced the day before. So as you mentioned, Boeing has issued an alert to its customers, and those customers in the United States for the 737 MAX include American, United, and Southwest. And Boeing said, basically, you know, we know that this could happen. Pilots are trained. Sometimes the airplane wants to do certain things in autopilot mode. Pilots can overrule that. Apparently, it's not that difficult, but they have to know what they're doing. The FAA also was set to issue an airworthiness directive. So all that really does is say, you know, Boeing had this idea, airlines were probably going to follow it anyways, but now they have to follow it. And just a reminder to people, this is a brand new airplane, essentially. The first one came out in 2017. It is still a 737, but it is a very updated version with lots of new technology. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens here, if maybe the technology failed or something happened. We just don't know at this point. But it is interesting to see this airworthiness directive.
Yeah, and so in layman's terms, really, I think just to summarize that, basically pilots can get familiar again with this system and this particular device so that they know what to do in case this happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. Brian, let's talk about another story that I find just absolutely interesting. How airlines know how much food they're going to need for each flight. This is a cool story that you wrote about just how sort of, you know, prepared the airlines are, but not so much in a way.
Well, that's true. I find food to be a very interesting subject. I think a lot of people have been on an airplane and perhaps you're sitting in the third to the last row and you want a certain sandwich or salad and the airline is out of it and you get very upset. I hate to say it, but often that's by design. One of the reasons is it's very hard to keep food fresh on an airplane. And so at the end of every flight, mostly the U.S. carriers are throwing out everything that had been cold. So your salads, your sandwiches, your things like that. They really don't want to throw out that food, right? Because that's cost going into the garbage. And so they're doing their absolute best to sell everything. Of course, they fail at that a lot, but at least they're trying. So that's why airlines run out. You know, it's 2018, and I've been talking to a lot of airlines about this, and a few of them have data scientists, and data scientists are hired to fix problems like this. So I was dealing with a UK airline, a European airline called EasyJet. They put their data science team on this, and they found that on an average flight, they were throwing out three pieces of fresh food at the end of every flight. And over the course of a year, you know, that's a lot of food that they were throwing out. I think they said 800,000 fresh items. So airlines are trying to get much smarter about this. It's a little bit different with drinks, because obviously drinks aren't perishable. You can carry 12 extra Cokes and, you know, you just use them for the next flight. But 12 extra Cokes add up in terms of weight. We know that weight means that airlines have to carry more fuel. Fuel is expensive, and that's the type of thing that adds up across, 6,000 flights a day as well.
Yeah, and for the data people that are trying to get a handle on this, it's not as simple as it sounds, because as you write in your story, you may have somebody who's on a Midwest flight that wants a Coke and a burger, and somebody on a Los Angeles flight who wants water and kale salad. So there are the individual tastes of people come into play here too, don't they?
Absolutely. As you say, I live in Los Angeles and we have fun with this, but apparently the stereotypes are true, at least according to JetBlue. People on flights to Los Angeles are drinking a lot less Coke and a lot more water. Another thing that every airline tells me, and it's kind of hilarious, is they sell far more alcohol on flights to Las Vegas than anywhere else. And so JetBlue has a pretty standard way of catering their airplanes. They've just decided that efficiency is best, standardization is best, and basically every flight is going to have the same makeup of drinks. They tried doing that with Las Vegas, and after a while they learned, you know what, we can't disappoint these people. We cannot run out of beer every single time. So Las Vegas is an outlier, and it gets different catering than everywhere else.
Brian, there's another story that we were following here in Chicago this week about Gogo. They reported earnings over the past week and not so good in terms of how they're faring these days.
Yeah, Gogo has had a tough time over the last few years. I think people remember that Chicago-based Gogo was really the first company to put sustainable Wi-Fi on airplanes. American Airlines and Delta had it as recently as about 2008 and 2009. But we're a decade later now, and Gogo has fallen behind a little bit. The technology that they used early on was something called air-to-ground. It wasn't a satellite-based system. People know that it was slow. It wasn't always reliable. And people blame Gogo for this. It probably wasn't entirely Gogo's fault. Gogo could have moved to satellite earlier, but airlines are their customers. And I don't think that in 2012, 2013, 2014, all airlines were convinced that they needed a high-speed internet on their planes. Now, of course, it's 2018. People expect Wi-Fi to be exactly the same on the airplane as it is everywhere else. There's some technological reasons why that's very difficult, but a lot of airlines are moving toward that. And I wrote this week that Gogo had had American, as I mentioned, as a customer for a long time. American is still sort of a customer, but they've moved planes to a Gogo competitor called Viasat. They might be a little bit faster. They might be a little bit more reliable. And that's hurt Gogo financially quite a bit.
So is there a path forward here to profitability? I know that your story says that they have about $1 billion in long-term debt. So what's the path forward?
Well, for me to predict, they've been a public company for about 5 years. They've never had a profitable quarter. Every earnings call I listen to, they tell you that they're on the right track. Maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe they'll sell the company at some point. Maybe there will be some consolidation in the in-flight Wi-Fi space. The good thing for Gogo is that customers and airlines want its product. You can imagine there are a lot of companies out there that are struggling, and nobody wants what they're selling. But in this case, we've learned over a long time that people who get on airplanes want to have Wi-Fi. Airlines want to give them Wi-Fi. And so Gogo has a reason for existing. What they haven't been able to do so far is have this reason for existing and make a profit. I'm not sure that there's a lot of hope there, but at least it's a possibility, because the core business is something that people want.
All right, Brian, good conversation. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is aviation business editor for Skift.com. Follow along on at Skift on Twitter, and Brian Summers at Brian Summers on Twitter as well.